This is Comics Therapy, episode 39. No reviews, just analysis. Up this week, three comics from April 23rd, 2014. The Eltingville Club, number one, The Bunker, number three, and Avengers Undercover, number three. Just as a reminder, we don't do reviews, but we do talk a lot, so this is definitely spoiler territory.
Hey, Aaron and Andrea, it's Joe from the Two at a Nerd calling with my comic shop confession. I'm in a nostalgic mood today, so you caught me at the right time. I wasn't really planning on calling in, but here it is. My best comic shop experience happened in 1997. I'd been frequenting a place in Omaha, and it switched owners, and it wasn't the same experience, and so I was looking for a new place to go. And Omaha, even in the 90s, had this huge contingent of comic stores. And I flipped through the yellow pages, I looked up comic books, because that's what you did in those days, and I found this place that I'd never heard of. Now, at that time, my comic shop experiences were relatively few, because I never really lived near one, I didn't have the means to get to one, for whatever reason. So, until I found that comic shop home, I'd only been in a couple of places. And so I found this place that was brand new to me, even though they'd been around for several years. And I went in, and it was clean, and it was bright, and the staff was friendly. And I bought a copy of the Squadron Supreme trade paperback with Mark Gruenwald's ashes in the ink. And I started making that my comic shop home. And before too long, I met Matt Baum. He was working for that comic book store. And from that point on, my life just took a turn that I never expected. I ended up managing that comic shop for 6 years. It led me to where I am now, hosting the Two-Headed Nerd. Gained me the experience I needed to move on to my next comic shop that I manage now, Legend Comics and Coffee. And I gained a group of friends that I will never be rid of. for lack of a better phrase. And so that one night being bored, dog sitting for a lawyer that I was working for, flipping through the yellow pages led me to the best comic book store experience I ever had and something that truly had an impact on my life to this day. And I'll never forget it. And I'll never regret it. Don't tell Matt Baum I said that. I love you guys. Bye.
Welcome to Comics Therapy. Neither Aaron nor I are licensed therapists, so don't take anything we say seriously. Our theme this week is betrayal. I sort of wanted to make it a Stockholm Syndrome type investigation, but that's such a loaded and controversial psychological term in and of itself that trying to apply it even poetically to fictional situations seemed like more of a stretch for us even than usual. But there's no doubt about it. Betrayal is par for the course in comics.
And this podcast.
What?
And this podcast.
Really? You're gonna interrupt me just to make snarky comments and we're just getting started?
Continue.
It keeps things interesting amongst established teams. And when doled out piecemeal to readers, it can up the intrigue in a developing story faster than almost anything else. Very occasionally, it's even used for laughs. But more often than not, a true betrayal is unexpected and shocking. And if you're me, it elicits an audible gasp or shriek or whatever. I'm also delightful to watch movies with.
Oh, God. Something we will never do.
Don't worry, Aaron. It is not even on my top 100 list of things that I want to accomplish in my life. Don't worry.
This is Matt. And so, yeah, I was at Bridge City Comics probably about a year ago or so for a signing event at Bridge City Comics in Portland. Steve Lieber was there just hanging out, and I started talking to him about Superior Foes of Spider-Man, which I think they're on issue 2 or 3. One point we were talking, and he goes, I don't have the first issue. I don't have a copy of it. I haven't been able to find it anywhere. They didn't send me anything. And at that second, I looked down and did one more at the store. And I pointed it out to him. I'm like, hey, look, Steve, there you go. They have it. and he bought it, and so I sold Steve Lieber his own comic book. Right now? I don't know. Probably have some more, but I don't know. Anyway, have fun, everybody. Stay safe this holiday season, and, we'll get back to you. Bye.
In between comic segments, your very own Nerd Confessions, answering life's deepest geeky questions and celebrating what we love and what we snark about comics. This week, we asked your best LCS stories. That's local comic shop. It's been a lot of talk in the media and on Twitter recently about some very real and very negative things in the comics community. One of the books we're looking at this week, The Eltingville Club, sanitizes some of the most...
Try again?
Satirizes. How about that?
Big difference.
Sanitizes, satirizes... Sandwiches. Some of the most egregious, offensive fan behaviors. To contrast that, we want to celebrate the positive and hear why you love your local comic shop. Every week, you can call, Skype, or email your confessions to us. The details are on the website, comicstherapy.com. Because catharsis is cool.
This is Captain Cummings, and this week's question you guys are asking, what is the best experience at a local comic shop, celebrate the positives of the industry. Well, every month at Gatekeeper Hobbies in my town, we have a event that Cameron Kiefer on Twitter started, which is a monthly comic meeting where everybody comes, fans, artists, writers, just anybody. Nobody is excluded and everybody is invited. And we just make Alan Moore jokes, get all giddy about, Doctor Who and what have you, and just have a good time for a couple hours once a month. We've done our own, projects together and listen to each other talk about different projects that we're doing, and it's just a fun time to get out and talk at the comic store. And that's about it. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. Later.
In between shows, you can find me on Twitter at Andrea Schock and Aaron at Aaron Myers. The show account is at Comics Therapy. How's your week been?
Incredible.
Really?
I guess.
I mean, isn't it mostly the same as usual?
It is mostly the same as usual.
You had to wear actual work clothes to work the other day. I saw the pictures.
I wasn't at work, though.
What did you have to do?
I was at a benefit breakfast.
Oh, that's right. So, not quite work, but work-ish.
I mean, sort of, yeah. I do side work. I maintain the computer network for our local Habitat for Humanity. And so they're having their fundraising breakfast, and I was invited to come. So it was business casual, which I don't really have that. I either have super casual, or I've got, like, interview clothes that I wear, once every 5 years or something.
Right.
So I kind of did the best I could with my interview clothes, but it was fine.
I enjoyed that you dressed it down with a Batman hoodie.
Yeah, like Letterman jacket, right? Not a hoodie, because then, that'd be ridiculous. Come on.
Wasn't it? I mean, it had like a zipper and it had
No, it was a button logo. Up. Yeah, it has a logo. Yeah, it was Batman.
Yeah.
Well, Batman's all business.
That's right. Batman is business casual.
Yeah, any of the superheroes, Batman's pretty business.
Okay, fair enough.
He's more business than like Superman.
Guess.
I mean, Captain America is sort of business. I guess Iron Man, too, would have counted.
Yeah, definitely.
But my Iron Man sweatshirt's, like, red, so that's a little more peacocking than I wanted to do at a breakfast.
Did you actually keep it on, like, during the breakfast?
No.
So it was just, like, your outside jacket?
Yes.
Okay. That's better. That's not quite as silly as I was imagining.
I mean, I walked in there with it on.
Right, but that's...
Yeah.
Then you removed it and could blend. That's what I'm looking for, is can you pass for business casual?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, by Eugene standards, for sure.
That's right.
I mean, not like New York or something like
that.
Did
you wear closed-toed shoes, I guess, is the biggest question. Or did you wear sandals?
No, I wore closed-toed shoes.
Okay.
If I was living back in San Diego, I could get away with sandals.
Really? Or do you think that you could?
Oh, no, I did it all the time.
Hmm.
I'd have to wear a, you know, shirt and tie and, you know, slacks and everything, but I'd wear my sandals still.
I am super judging. Well, not even pretending not to.
You've never lived in San Diego.
This is true.
Has a very different business casual dress code
than
Pittsburgh.
I don't live in Pittsburgh now. I don't think you could get away with that in San Francisco.
No, I think you could have at one time in San Francisco. I think San Francisco's changed a lot.
Yeah.
In 90s tech culture, San Francisco, for sure. Like, I interviewed at Macromedia, like, in the like early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
I was specifically told, like, my friend worked there, and he said, like, if you wear a tie, they're not going to interview you.
Okay.
So, like, I wore jeans, I wore a polo, and even that was, like, kind of iffy, like, yeah, that's probably fine, and I wore sandals.
Hmm.
And I didn't take the job. I got offered it.
I definitely am familiar with the startup and tech, I guess, costuming that you find in this area, because it's like a whole thing in and of itself. But I don't know. Sandals and business casual, it's never going to be my bag.
Well, go back to New York City then.
Okay.
We don't need you around here. It's just a different type of sandal in Eugene.
What? What does that mean?
Well, like San Diego, we're flip-flops. Like, here it's Tevas or Birkenstocks.
Yeah, for some reason, I can actually handle the flip-flops better than I can the Tevas.
Then you're not invited to come and live in Eugene. I don't know
what
to tell you.
I have graciously turned down your offer to have me come and live in Eugene multiple times. Mostly because we would kill each other.
I don't think I've ever offered that.
You have.
Not sober.
Well, that's probably true.
Okay. Trying to put the boundaries on the conversation.
Right. But, I mean, we really would. If we spent too much time in the same place, only one of us would survive.
Well, we barely make it through an hour at this point.
But we're not even physically in the same location. I mean,
yeah,
if
I know.
We were
yes. I'm definitely not arguing this with you.
Can we argue about arguing?
I'm sure we could. We could probably spend an hour arguing about arguments. And who would win arguing arguments?
Delightful.
How about your week?
I'm teaching this week. I'm back on, and it's early. I'm done early, but damn, I start early, and it's a big adjustment.
It sounds nice.
I guess. I've been going to bed at, like, 9.
Wow.
I know.
And getting up at 5?
Like 5:30, yeah.
Yeah, that's serious.
It is, as a matter
of fact. It's like a grown-up schedule.
It's a terrible grown-up schedule. And so the fact that I was off that schedule last night and was up until 12:30, today I'm exhausted.
This is going to be a good show.
It's going to be awesome.
All right.
But yeah, there's nothing much else going on around here. Hockey and comics.
Hockey and comics and teaching.
Yep.
The trifecta.
Pretty boring week.
Well, let's talk about some exciting comics then.
Okay, we've got 3 to talk about this week, so let's get started.
Hey, it's Leslie. I have a friend who lives in a small town in California. She's my best comic book buddy. Her husband works at a school, and unfortunately last year they had a school shooting, and luckily only one student was injured and no one was killed. So my friend was putting together a care package of comics for this kid. And I was in my shop, Cosmic Monkey, here in Portland. And it seemed like it wasn't too long after Free Comic Book Day. So just on a whim, I asked them if they had anything left over that they were, you know, tripping over. And maybe I could send them down to add to the care package for this kid. And they didn't have any more books from Free Comic Book Day left over. But he just went around and grabbed, like, a bunch of back issues and handed me this huge stack for free and just said, hey, here, send these down. So I just thought that was really cool. They've always been super awesome, and I just love them so much. And that just made me so happy. And the kid happy. It was very cool. So that's my happy local comic shop story. Bye.
Our first book this week is The Eltingville Club #1, written by Evan Dorkin, with colors and production by Sarah Dyer. It's published by Dark Horse Comics, Aaron, I want to hear you summarize this book, because I know that we touched on it regarding the nerd confession prompt, but this is way out of my wheelhouse, so it is all yours.
Talking about comic shops is out of your wheelhouse?
This book and Evan Dorkin specifically.
Oh, well, Evan Dorkin, I mean, if we're talking about him, I would say a lot of his stuff is very satirical.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's kind of, besides like something like Beast of Burden, which is more supernatural kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like Milk and Cheese and this, and he has a very biting look at life. And mm-hmm. this is a slice of life, biting satirical look at the comic book shop and a mm-hmm. group of friends and kind of that adolescent age where you're a teenager and the comic shop is your, it's your clubhouse. In
right.
a way, and the things that go along with that, the stereotypes and all the kind of terrible things that go along with that that culture, I guess.
Have you seen the pilot for the animated version of this?
No.
Okay. And have you? I don't know. I haven't. Well, I had to look up a bunch of stuff because this isn't my typical type of book that I read.
Mm-hmm.
So I was interested in. Like his other stuff that he won an Eisner for, and then they did a comedy pilot based on that. It's called Dork, and it's set in this same little town when the characters are younger.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not familiar with it.
No, and this is, I think we should kind of almost talk about this standalone in a way.
I'm fine with that. I just was curious if you were drawn to it because you had like a particular affinity for him as a creator. I mean, I know that like Matt Baum is a big fan of his.
Yes, I mean, so like, I have the collected Milk and Cheese hardcover that I've read, and I really like Beast of Burden, and mm-hmm. I have other things of his, but those are definitely the most influential works that I've read.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I really like him as a creator.
So this is very biting. It's very satirical. It's very over the top in a way that I don't always love. I don't have to love everything that we read.
I am curious. Yes. So first I want to hear what you thought of this and why this kind of humor doesn't appeal to you. Besides you not really getting funny things.
Right. I guess that sometimes when it's a really unappealing set of characters, intentionally so, mm-hmm. in order for us to be satirizing really disgusting behavior, we have to like overemphasize that really gross behavior. And like, it's not funny or appealing to me. Like, for example, I've never been a tremendously huge fan of like Crumb, for example.
Okay.
So uh-huh. this, I feel, is like a descendant of that style. It's very Mad Magazine, that type of satire. And I generally prefer something that's a little bit more sophisticated.
Hmm.
I don't mean that because I'm a fucking snob. Yes, I am a fucking snob. But in this particular case, I just don't think that it's anything other than I'm not as comfortable with this kind of humor. And so it's not as funny to me.
Is it like, I wonder if this could be quantified then as male humor.
I don't know. I wasn't sure if it made sense to go that route at all. It certainly is speaking more to male, like offensive male behavior, obviously, in even the way that the women who come into the comic shop in the book are treated and objectified and then chased out. But it goes beyond that. I mean, I think,
well,
I don't want to make this into an academic conversation because I don't think that there's enough there for it to be that.
That's fine, because to me, this was a very... Is it okay if I speak now?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
This was a very... This hit very close to home to me, especially for the age group of the, like the characters we're looking at.
Okay.
And my comic book shop experience like at that age.
Okay.
So like... To kind of fill it in, when I started to go to comic shops, like I still live very rurally and we'd go in, once a week to town or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The comic shop that was open in town was called TJ's. And TJ, who ran the shop, was an asshole. Like he was very much that guy.
Mm-hmm.
he had a guy who worked there, Shane, who was like, you know, probably, I don't know when Shane started working there, but he was probably in high school and then continued to work there, you know, and run the shop. And then eventually there was this betrayal in town where Shane left the store and opened his own store.
Oh.
Ground Zero. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And everyone started going to Ground Zero and no one went to TJ's anymore because nobody liked him.
Huh.
And so Ground Zero was our, like, you know, it was the comic book kids. Like, that's where we hung out. There was a back room where everyone hung out, you know, back room, quote unquote, you know, it's like table area where people could role play and read comics. And then eventually, you know, with all the collectible card games, everyone played Magic the Gathering and stuff back there. It eventually, like, there was that shift too. Like, you know, Ground Zero became, there was a hierarchy and a pecking order, and that same sort of stuff went on that's portrayed in this book. Like, a lot, like, the girls that went in there weren't too many. They were like comic book shop girl groupies, in a way.
What does that mean?
They were usually the girlfriends of one of the greasy guys that would hang out.
Okay.
They weren't necessarily into any of the stuff that was there, but they hung out because they were just kind of like town kids, and it was like a crash pad, in a way.
Okay.
You know, there weren't that many girls that would hang out with the guys.
Okay.
You know, so it was very much that kind of portrayal. The story gets very dark as time goes on of Ground Zero. Like, I don't want to say anything that would be libelous.
Oh, boy.
But Shane liked young girls that would hang out at the store. And it was the eventuality of why I stopped going there because, I mean, in my opinion, he's a pedophile. When he has a 14-year-old girl living with him.
That's pretty libelous right there. You maybe you want to... Okay.
But that's common knowledge, and there's part of a reason the store closed.
Oh, gosh.
So, yeah. So, I mean, there was a lot of bad... It was a lot of dark times in that store.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, it's sort of... This issue spoke very deeply to me.
Okay.
In a lot of those things, like that... It was both a sanctuary and sort of a trap.
There was nothing about this that was a sanctuary to me. Even at the very beginning, before things all go to hell, the store is disgusting. The people who come to the store are disgusting. The rules within the store are disgusting. So I'm not saying that you didn't have a place that offered you both refuge and, you know, also had some drama. But I think that sometimes I have difficulty with satire that is so, like, outside of my comfort zone that there's nothing recognizable left.
Yeah, but nothing in here was unrecognizable to me. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Is those sort of rules, even though they're exaggerated, still existed at Ground Zero. The box of porno behind the counter,
mm-hmm.
You know, all that kind of stuff, like the same sort of hierarchy of nerds and... You know, the judgment and everything else and proving your cred. And
I had such an isolating experience reading comics. Like, it wasn't a shared, like, social endeavor for me until I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not... There are some exceptions. There are some rare exceptions in high school. But when I started reading mostly graphic novels, and then I started reading single issues, and there were a couple of shops that, like, my mom would take me to. And then I started going to, like, the smaller little mini cons around Pittsburgh, but always by myself and always as an observer more than a participant. So I did a lot of people watching, and I did a lot of, like, sitting and drawing and watching the people and listening to the people, but not, like, engaging in any kind of weird interactions with weird people. I don't know. I think about that, and I think about how I could have been turned off to the entire scene if I had had some negative experiences, but luckily most of those happened when I was older.
Hmm.
So I don't have a strong memory as a, say, like, 13, 14-year-old girl walking into a comic shop and being... like, totally alienated. I don't think I was necessarily welcomed, but I bounced back and forth between a couple of different places, so I was never really a regular.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read a bunch of stuff, like, at the library, too. So I think that I didn't have all the trappings of the rest of the, like, culture part to get bogged down with.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the people that I then did any kind of role playing with were separate from that same kind of group. So it sounds like for you, the community part was, I mean, somewhat a product of where you grew up, right? As a relatively rural neighborhood?
Sure, yeah. Well, you know, this was in town, so this was like...
Right. What was town for you, though?
Well, I mean, you know, Grass Valley, Nevada City was probably at that time 7,000 people or something like that.
That's
adorable. Where I grew up was 300 people over like a 25-mile radius or something.
So I can't relate to that at all. I have no idea what it would be like to have like a single entity be the center of your adolescent like social circle.
Yeah, you didn't really have a choice. You know, if you wanted to hang out and play card games or, you know, buy comics, you kind of had that one place in the one place to go.
Right.
You know, like my first experience at that I really like going to TJ's is, I don't know where I got it from, but I had some Lois Lane comic that maybe one of my dad's friends gave to me or something like that, you know, from the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I was like, it was pretty cool to have something so, like, what seemed really old to me.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going in there, so I brought it with me just to bring to them and ask them, like, you know, I think I'd looked up in, like, a Beckett magazine or something like that, like, and didn't realize, like, volume numbers and how to look up, like, you know, issue numbers and that sort of thing. So it looked like it was, like, worth, like, $150 in the guide. So, you know, I brought it in and said, like, I looked this up and it says, like, it's worth about $150. Is that right? And, you know, they just were dicks to, like, you know, like a 13-year-old or 12-year-old kid,
right?
You know, laughing in my face saying, no, it's, like, worth, like, a quarter and, like, you know, throwing it back at me kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, your first experience, and, I mean, there was no surprise on why that place closed.
And also with the underage girls.
Well, no, this was TJ's. Oh, so okay, this is where everyone left. You know, people were pretty, it was weird because it put kids in a position. Like, I don't know why there wasn't adult oversight of any of this. It was, I don't know, the whole thing's very weird. But, you know, whereas 16, 17-year-olds, like, I knew this, like, 35-year-old guy hanging out with, like, 13, 14-year-olds and one of them living at his house and stuff. Like, it was all kind of, we're like, yeah, that's not cool, but, you know, what are we going to do? That's a lot of pressure to put on basically kids that I would think back now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, obviously we knew it was wrong, but what are you going to do, you know? I don't know. I mean, in hindsight, I mean, if I were now, like, walking into a store and or hanging out at a place and you knew something like that was happening, you'd go call the police.
Do you think that the kinds of, like, really insane offensive behaviors in this issue and to an extent the kinds of stuff that you're describing, do you think that that's like so far out of the norm of what happens now to be like clearly satire? Like nothing is really this bad. Yes?
I think it depends. It really depends. Yeah. There's one store in town that I don't go to very often that is
like in Eugene?
Yeah. That is not like this, but there are elements like this.
So maybe it's just that, like, there's always going to be really shitty people. And if they happen to also open a comic shop or frequent a comic shop, they can enforce their shittiness.
Yeah, you people, you know, like, those kind of places allow for, like, shitty people to have fiefdoms, you know, places that they rule over.
But that's true with almost any other kind of industry. I've worked at really shitty theaters. I've worked for incredibly douchebag directors who just, like, are abusive. Who pick up props and, like, fucking throw them across the stage and have a little tantrum because that's the way that they are. I think that that's true in the tech industry. I think that that's true in, like, in anything. It's just that this is so small and, like, we take it so personally. I'm not excusing it. I realize that made it sound almost like I was saying it's okay. I'm not at all. It just is what it is, and it'll sort itself out if you're not patronizing those businesses.
Sure. Or a lot of what this story also deals with is that kind of that transition between adolescence and adulthood too.
Why, you realize that it's actually not cool to act that way?
Or to patron places like this. Like, it's not the only place in the world.
Or you don't, in which case then you deal with the consequences as an adult.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because at the end of this issue, you know, the adult owner of the store is the one who's still in jail.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because then there are, you know, grown-up consequences.
Yes.
That was a really heavy conversation about something that was kind of inherently supposed to be comedy.
Kind of. I don't know. That's why I wanted to talk about this so bad, because so much of it, like, that I was reading was, like, just cathartic for me.
Yeah.
So.
It's just not my bag. It's cool, though, that you liked it.
I liked it very much also because that humor, it seemed to be, like, it got the humor of, like, the experience that I had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the ridiculousness of this little, like, subculture.
Yeah. Yes. Emphasis on the ridiculous.
Yes. So let's talk about something not funny, and we'll make it funny, maybe.
Will we?
Probably not.
Hey guys, occasional listener, first time contributor. My story might be slightly different as my LCS is actually online. You see, I live in a small village in Yorkshire, England, and the nearest comic book shop is about 30 to 40 miles away. As a non-driver, it's difficult to get to as public transportation sucks. So I use intercomics.com, a web-based LCS actually based in Sheffield, England. Lee Campbell is the gent who runs it and is the most approachable, funny guy you can meet. He recommends stuff, sends stuff out for free, comics and promotional stuff to longtime buyers. Lee even commissioned his own podcast for the site, offers reviews and opinion pieces, and spotlights indie creators and developers. He has become a fast friend. Bags and boards, all his comics, charges a one-off fee for postage instead of a price for each item, and is quite literally the best damn shop about. The man deserves as much praise as possible and will help anyone out. He even sorts out layaways and will organize payment by invoice. He even takes PayPal. He goes above and beyond, always. Check him out on Twitter. His handle is @intercomics. Keep up the great work, guys. Rob Jones at Hulk Smash 1985.
Our second book is The Bunker Number 3, written by Joshua Hale-Fialkov and drawn, colored, and lettered by Joe Infinari. It is published by Oni Press.
I know that we do a spoiler warning at the top of the show, but if you're not reading this book and you have any interest in it, which you should, skip this section. Seriously, come back for Avengers Undercover. But I don't want you to blame either me or Aaron for ruining the story for you.
Just read it. It's so good.
It's, yeah, and there's not that much to get caught up on.
Nope.
Here's the recap from the third issue. After finding a package with tomorrow's newspaper inside, Grady learns that he will become a hero after saving a number of people from an explosion in downtown San Francisco, and that Heidi will be the one to capture an iconic photo of him. Down in the bunker, Billy argues with an older Grady who insists the explosion cannot be prevented. When Billy is unable to reach anyone by phone, he watches a video made by his future self, a video that seems to tell him to do what Grady says for the good of the future.
Yeah.
Holy shit, that whole moment where it was like Billy was caught, like future Billy was caught, and then, I don't know, it seems like Grady's manipulated everything and is just absolutely behind all of the strings. I didn't see that coming. It was fucking awesome. This is a great story.
Oh, yeah. No, this book is awesome.
Yeah.
It's a great premise of, and we just, you know, you've either read it or you haven't, but that whole finding, you know, that finding the bunker, outlining the end of the world and uh-huh. how you guys are going to bring it about. And then also now we're at the point where maybe they all brought it about, a couple of people architected it.
I feel like that. I don't know. I expect that there are going to be just twists and turns throughout this entire story, right?
For sure, yeah.
But that ultimate betrayal between Grady and, like, now it's not just Grady and Billy. It's, like, the whole rest of them and how he is potentially orchestrating the way that they think that they're doing the right thing, but not. Yeah. So great. So great. Because there's no way to know. And that is like a power that is, it's difficult to conjure up that kind of like imbalance of power.
Well, but especially it's like it's conjuring up at this point. You can't trust yourself.
Right. Right. And the only reason why it works is because we're talking about, like, future communication and like, essentially time travel, which is, like, so out of what we can actually relate to because it's science fiction, right? But
maybe.
But that is an automatic, insanely incomprehensible imbalance of power, because anybody coming from the future has all of the answers.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that you can seemingly do in the present to, like, match wits with somebody who has had the chance to already see how things play out. And it's a great conversation about, like, free will, and oh man, it's so good. But that twist of who is actually behind this was smashingly brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know how much more we have to say other than that, because it's still early in this comic, but I love it. It feels like the early episodes of Lost in a lot of ways.
I've only seen the first season of Lost ever, so
okay,
I mean
that's good.
Yeah,
Lost is great in my opinion for, like, I don't know, I forget how many seasons, but, like, you know, the 2/3 of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of goes off the rails. But, like, those 2/3, like, you're just wondering what is going to happen next and who's doing what and who's really who. And yeah, there's all of that in here. And it's so perfectly executed that you don't know what to expect next, or what, even if what you've read so far is actually what's happening.
Very quickly, in 3 issues, we've established, like, a group dynamic, and then we've torn it down. So,
yeah.
Billy, I thought from the beginning, was like this, like, he's the outlier. He's the one who doesn't have a letter. I thought he was going to be a bad guy or get killed almost immediately. I mean, there was obviously an explanation for why he wasn't part of the future. And so when that is not the case, like, I enjoy being surprised when I don't know that I'm going to be surprised. I fucking hate surprises when the other person cannot maintain that the surprise is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm super guilty of that because I'm a terrible person. But if you can catch me unawares, I love it. I love it. And so I wasn't expecting that kind of moment with future Grady. And it's so, like, insidious and instantly ups the stakes with, like, what they're going to be able to do in the present. Like, so quickly.
I really like that this outlines how time kind of twists people, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
there's things that have happened to the characters in the present that have set up things that happen in the future, you know, that have molded their personalities already. But it's like the cement hasn't hardened yet, mm-hmm. and we get those glimpses of what happens once it does.
Well, even, like Natasha flipping out about Heidi sleeping with her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, that's the core of her letter.
Right.
And that is what sets her path, like, along the way. And not that I'm advocating cheating, but, like, it happened once and it wasn't really a thing. And yet it's this defining moment for the rest of her life.
Ugh, I know. It's like, let it go already.
Shut up. You know what I mean? So I think you're right. I think that these, like, little glimpses of these things that are happening to the characters and then being able to flash forward to see how it's impacted them years and years later. And now, like, teasing it out and seeing, like, how deep the mistrust goes amongst them. It's good. It's a very, very kind of original premise and, like, character drama.
Yeah. It's taking, you know, we've seen plenty of time travel stories, and we've seen plenty of the friends in the woods in the cabin and something happens stories, but this is the best of all those
so far. You're right, it's super early, but man, it's good stuff.
Yep.
Okay, last one
for me. It wasn't necessarily one specific experience, as it was going back 25 years or so, being 7 or 8 years old, and my parents brought me into my local comic book store for the very first time. I never knew such a thing existed, getting books off racks at bookstores or mall kiosks like Reader's Island. The Disney Ducks were my gateway into comics, and the proprietors of my local store were so kind to this little kid amongst grown adult that they pulled out a step stool for me to be able to reach into the comic boxes and see what was inside. It's a wonderful image, at least in my mind, of that young age of discovery and finding something you love for the first time. In this case, comics. I even remember one of those first Disney Duck books, Don Rosa's Son of the Sun, with a cover of Scrooge McDuck and Flintheart Gloomgold fighting over a gold disc while towering totems looked down upon them. And there I stood, 7 or 8, on that stool, barely able to reach into the box, just staring at the cover, awash with wonder. It was a pretty cool day.
Our last book this week is Avengers Undercover number 3, written by Dennis Hopeless, drawn by Timothy Green II, in color by Jean-Francois Beaulieu.
Wow. Everything about that was wrong.
My French is not good.
Wow. Okay, go.
Well, tell me what it is, Frenchie.
Nope.
I'm sorry. And lettered by Joe Caramanga. Avengers Undercover is published by Marvel Comics.
You're a terrible, terrible, terrible person.
That makes two of us. Go.
Yep. This series picks up where Avengers Arena left off, exploring the aftermath of Murder World for the survivors. All of the events of Arcade's plot have been shared with and viewed by the world, and the survivors are each dealing with that invasion of privacy and delay of a return to normalcy in different, more and less successful ways. Cullen Bloodstone is obsessed with revenge, and he traced Arcade to Bagalia, home of Baron Zemo. When his friends find him, he reveals that he's joined the Masters of Evil, that he feels comfortable there because they don't judge him for what happened on the island. Before things get too heated, though, Cullen's new pals teleport everyone to Arcade's newest endeavor, a pay-to-play murder world for the world's bored billionaires, and an opportunity for the survivors to exact their revenge on the man who broke them.
Yes. So you loved Avengers Arena.
But there's a caveat there, because I didn't read it when I was supposed to.
When were you supposed to?
Like when it started.
Oh, did you jump into it?
No. I read the whole thing. It's just that, like, I didn't...
As long as you read the story, who cares?
Except that, like, I ignored for months that it was so good. It's so good. You need to be reading this. But
you do that with everything, so that's par for the course for you.
Well, but every once in a while, I have to just admit publicly that I was super wrong. Avengers Arena is so good. It's so good. And I just didn't pay attention to it. And it's not because it was, you know, like a lot of people said, it's this whole, like, Hunger Games knockoff, which I've never read or seen the movies, so that didn't bother me. I just didn't pay enough attention to it to even know who was in it. So when I sat down to start reading it, and I realized who some of the characters were, like, I flipped my shit because I was so excited to see them again. Sometimes I don't pay attention.
Yeah, I only really care if you admit that you were wrong if it's stuff that I tell you to read.
You didn't tell me to read this.
I know, that's why it's like, it doesn't matter to me that if you apologize or not. Right. I'm just going to cut that out in editing. Because I was the same way. I think I read like the first 5 or so, and then I let it fall off, and then I went back and caught up. Yeah.
Oh man, I was so super sucked in as soon as I started reading it. It's just that then I had all like 20 some to read all at once.
Yeah, for some reason, I don't know. It just fell off the radar, and then I went back and read it.
Do you not like things that are joyful or excellent?
I would hardly say children murdering each other are joyful, but that's your twisted view of reality, so...
I guess that was not the right word.
Yeah, that says something about you.
I don't mean it like that.
Sure. No. Why would we take it that way?
But I do enjoy real consequences and using those as an opportunity to explore character development.
Yeah, sure.
That doesn't happen very often in Marvel. Come on.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. I mean, I would argue that nobody important was killed.
No, but the effects... Put it this way, the fact that we are still seeing emotional effects from the shit that went down in Avengers Arena is so rare, and I applaud that, because there's a lot of traumatic bullshit that happens to these characters, And we just pass it off as if it's not really that big of a deal. And they never really have to process their experiences. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that they actually were really affected by what happened to them. And I think it's kind of awesome that now we're seeing some of those results. Like what Hazmat is dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this should really be called, instead of like Avengers Undercover, it really should be like Avengers PTSD or something.
But that's awesome. Mm-hmm. In a non-joyful way.
Okay. I think you've already said it. The cat's out of the bag. We all know your feelings on child murder.
Oh, God.
Yep. Now it's public.
Uh-huh.
So I do like that. That this is these books are the books of consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And then it explores that trauma with superpowers, but it's just the human trauma, and especially with children, you know, adolescents, and how much more affected they are. You know, it's like you could take somebody like Hawkeye, who's been through a million deaths and hardened by, you know, years of horrible experiences, but these kids are still pretty raw.
Yes, and also so far they could beat him up and be 10 times smarter than him with the way he's being written right now.
Well, I mean, it's a different discussion, but you know what I mean? It's like there are consequences in other stories. Like you could say Captain America or something like that. Pretty awful stuff happens to Captain America on a fairly regular basis. He always seems to kind of shake it off.
Right. And I don't think that every single character has to have like truly authentic recovery to his or her traumatic experiences. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago, and I've talked a ton about it offline, that honestly, sequential stories aren't designed to really investigate deep psychological trauma and recovery. That's not why we're reading them.
Sure.
But having a moment or several moments in Avengers Undercover that are like really capitalizing on the experiences that the characters had in Murder World and how they're all dealing with it differently. And like some of them kind of seem to be healthy and mm-hmm. some of them don't. I think like Cullen's response, looking for like a group to fit in with and going toward the villain route just because he can identify with what they are offering him. Like he's feeling like he's a terrible villain himself. He's feeling mm-hmm. like he isn't connected to his fellow heroes. So it's a pretty obvious thing to then seek out some kind of companionship that would be more in line with how he feels about himself. That's deep shit that you don't usually get in like Marvel characters.
No, for sure. Yeah, I think what it comes down to, why we, in a reality sort of situation too, is the downtime doesn't really exist for most, like, say, superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you have to deal with your feelings in the moments where you're not having to do something. Like, if you're having to fly off into space and, you know, fight a space battle or something like that, you don't have time to reflect on...
I'm sorry. Fly off into space to fight a space battle. Is awesome. Well,
where else would you fight a space battle?
You're right, Aaron.
Yeah,
you're right.
In space.
Right.
You don't have time to sit around and kind of reflect on the trauma of the past, mm-hmm. you know?
And again, I'm not looking for that in every story. I'm not advocating that as every writer needs to somehow include like a chapter on PTSD, because that's not really what most of us, myself included, are looking for in sequential storytelling. But when you do have the opportunity in a book that like allows for that, it can be refreshingly honest.
I agree. It's also it's very personal, and like that kind of grieving, you know, mm-hmm. moments are very personal to me at right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of those quiet moments that these characters are dealing with what happened that I'm really identifying with in a lot of ways.
Sure. There's a lot of anger, and there's a lot of reflection and like sort of personal exploration, and in some cases like returning back home, and in other cases abandoning home. And I think that is so like touchingly accurate mm-hmm. with characters that in some cases we had never met before. We don't have like this long history with them. Some of them were brand new from Avengers Arena, and yet going through that traumatic experience, like, we get to know them, and now seeing how they're dealing with the consequences, and given the chance to actually, like, lethally exact their revenge on Arcane, it'll be interesting to see what happens after this issue, and kind of how what happens at the end fits in with, apparently, Zemo's larger plan.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I enjoy this better than, like, a whole bunch of other Marvel things I'm reading right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think that this... And I'm sure that part of it is because I just zipped through all of Arena.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think that it's so completely well-crafted. I think... It's like a really strong story that is independent from some of the other things that are happening in the larger universe. And mm-hmm. So maybe that's why it's more successful, I think.
I could see that, sure. I agree. And everyone should continue to read it, or at least start reading it.
Yes, please. But start from the beginning, especially if you are a Runaways fan. And especially if you were clueless like me, and then all of a sudden you turn the page and there's Nico and Chase, and you're like, holy fucking shit, how did I not know that they were in this book?
Written just for you.
Who would do that? Who would just be that not paying attention?
Who knows?
Right.
Well, I think that's it for this week. I think I'm done.
You got nothing else to say?
I'm tapped out now.
Well, it's because you let me do most of the talking as usual.
Yeah, it's exhausting listening to you.
I know.
Well... I guess next week we'll have another one of these, huh?
Do we have to?
Yeah, contractually, yeah.
Yes, right. I forgot. Blood, all that
right stuff. All right. Well, I guess we'll talk to everyone next week, huh?
Excellent. Have great reading, everyone, and we'll catch you on the flip side.
And everything, blah, 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 comicstherapy.com.
Oh, that's an important thing to say if we're not going to have an interview.
Yeah. No interview, right. Blah, 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 comicstherapy.com, pre-order comics, and we love you.
You're adorable.
Okay, goodbye.
Hey, this is Random Shane calling in with my best experience at a local comic shop. I've had many great experiences at my LCS. One I want to talk about is this past weekend when I went in and held in my hand an Avengers number 2, 3, right to... set in number 7. After that, I kind of got misty-eyed, and I saw number 16, and it was at that point where I was like, I'm holding art. I'm holding a piece of history. And what was even better was the fact that my shop owner actually brought them out when he saw me come in to show me, because he could appreciate my appreciation of those types of books. Just an excellent all-around experience. So, thanks, guys. Bye.
You took my hand, you showed me how. You promised me you'd be around. Uh-huh, that's right. I took your words and I believed in everything you said to me. Yeah, that's right. You said forever.